Today on Rainbow Country, the 15th annual Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Rainbow Country, what I like to call a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. So, this is episode 191. Today, the 15th annual Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival that runs until March 15th. Venues include Comedy Bar, the Theater Center, and Crow's Theater. Today, we'll hear from four LGBT acts that are part of this year's festival. That conversation, up next. The 15th annual Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival runs March 4th to the 15th. Venues include Comedy Bar, the Theater Center, and Crow's Theater. For ticket information, all that sort of good stuff, make sure you visit torontosketchfest.com. The 15th annual festival has some powerful LGBT representation, and some of that fabulous gayness, I'm calling gayness, is joining me around the table. I have AJ Charlie. Hi.
Hi, hello.
Brandon Hackett. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Becca Zwick. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
And Anders Yates.
Yes, that's right. Hi.
Hi. First of all, thank you all for being here to have your voice, your stories be heard by the LGBT community and beyond. So thank you all for being here. Okay, the elevator pitch. I'd love for each of you to give us your elevator pitch for your show that's showing at this year's festival. And AJ, tots and prayers, what's the elevator pitch for your show?
Okay, so I'm presenting a new solo sketch show called Thoughts and Prayers. And this is a show, I call it a gay The Good Place. If you haven't seen The Good Place, it's a show where, like, People died, unfortunately, and in order to get into heaven, they have to have scored a certain amount of points that they accumulate based on the good things that they do. And my little through line between the sketches in this show is that I'm a little twink who just died, and I'm trying to get into gay heaven, and gay God counts up all of the gay things I've done in life, and if I have enough points, I make it in. And so it's going back between different moments of my life, tallying up the things that I've done to see if I ultimately become that thought that makes it past the gay gates of gay heaven.
Wow. So when is your show, like what venue, a date,
that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So my show is March 13th at the BMO Center, the Theater Center BMO Incubator Space. Mm-hmm. So you could probably check it out on March 13th if you're interested in a little bit of that gay goodness. But I think I'll do it more than just – those two shows are in the context of Toronto Sketch Fest.
Yeah.
Which is going on for a good happy 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you might catch it outside of that sometime.
Well said.
Yeah.
Brandon Hackett. Hackett and Langdon?
Yes.
What is your elevator pitch?
So Hackett and Langdon is a sketch duo that I perform with my friend Jonathan Langdon, who is one of my favorite people and performers in the world. And it's basically the way that I like to describe it within my own head to myself is gay Key and Peele. Jonathan is not queer. I am myself queer. It's basically the sort of my attempt at theatrical, thinky, in terms of premises, like robust sketch comedy that is trying to examine what it's the sort of intersections of being black and queer and often West Indian within from the perspective, I suppose, of two early 30s men.
So Becca Zwick, Bat Tattoo, that's your comedy sketch troupe?
Yes, we're a comedy sketch duo. We've been working together for three years now. Me and Noah Farberman, who is my comedy partner, we met in college and have been working together ever since. This is the first time we've been in the festival together, though. But our show, it's... We write for ourselves and each other a lot, so it's kind of like weird, like zany kind of stuff. We take a lot of very realistic situations but give them sort of like a wacky twist or something like that. So it's a lot of just strange situations that we sort of play with. We play with characters, and it's a lot of writing ourselves as characters as well. So we really sort of like to throw a lot of things at the wall and see what sticks. And usually the audience is in for the ride of whatever sticks to the wall.
And venues, times, dates?
So our first show will be March 7th at Comedy Bar, where we share the bill with Freakin' the Beats. And then on March 12th at the Theater Center Incubator Space, we're part of the Alternative Root Showcase, which has a handful of other acts on it. I can't remember them all right now, so I won't list the ones I do remember and hurt somebody's feelings. But it's a really neat showcase of sort of different alternative troupes in the show that like do act that's like a bit outside the norm.
Anders Yates, your elevator pitch for your show.
So I'm doing a solo sketch comedy show, and I, for many years, have been part of a troupe called Uncalled For, and have done improv with them and sketch comedy with them, and I was used to developing, you know, really theatrical, weird, mind-bending kinds of experiences with them, and I wanted to do something just on my own. There's no title for the show, so the closest thing that I came up with recently for a title was just Anders Yates, Desperate, Horny, and Afraid. So those are some of the themes that that I'll be looking at in the show. I do think it's a fairly political show, but it has no political agenda whatsoever. The only agenda is to make people laugh.
And dates, times, all that sort of good
it's,
stuff?
It's playing March 11th at the Theater Center with Cereal in a Mason Jar at 9 p.m.
AJ.
Hi.
What's your idea of gay heaven?
My idea of gay heaven? Huh. It's a lot of things. It's interesting. Part of the plot, or like the point of how gay heaven is used in the show, is that there's like a kind of a rigid definition of what homosexuality is based on the collective tropes that we know from the media and things like that. And those like there's a crop top station, there's infinite poppers, those very like traditional classical gay things. But for me, I feel like I'm a little bit of a weird alternative gay, or there's some parts about me that I'm trying to see how they fit into the known structure that is the homosexual, that I'm trying to still like reconcile. And so my idea of gay heaven, there'd be a lot of Bjork. There'd be a lot of Radiohead. That one's not a very traditionally homosexual band.
Oh, this homosexual loves Radiohead.
You know what? Maybe, okay, maybe we'll see Radiohead in the gay afterlife. But my idea of gay heaven is one where no matter what the way you express your sexuality, you can be accepted in this community. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea that beyond all of the nonsense sketches that are in the show that I'm really trying to approach. Mm-hmm. And I hope those sentences made sense.
They did. They made gay sense.
Gay sense. I love that.
Brandon, mm-hmm.
comedy from the gay black perspective, do you think that that's a challenging topic or has it been a challenging topic for you to tackle?
I would say that – well, the way that I have approached it is I tend to kind of – I don't – any sketches that I write or any scenes that I write, I don't necessarily approach them from a sort of like general perspective of like here's what it means to be black and gay because I don't necessarily have the grand answer that I feel like everyone that everyone would necessarily relate to. All that I really can offer when I'm performing sketch comedy or writing something is my own particular perspective of my own life. And
which would be a person of color and gay.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Yeah. And I think there are obviously myriad ways to be gay as there are myriad ways to be black. I sort of feel like I'm sort of making a similar point to AJ, but all that I really try to do is I try to I don't shy away from being queer in my sketch comedy. I mean, I think a default for a lot of people is to write boyfriend, girlfriend, or from up until even 10 years ago, you'd have like straight men sort of dressing up in drag and kind of speaking in screechy falsetto and being like, I'm your wife, which is sort of like, I think using that as a joke in a lot of like old sketch comedies, like tired and like hack and bad. So I try not to shy away from depicting like same sex relationships, both as a political sort of act, but also depoliticized sometimes too, just sort of like as an attempt to sort of present a normalized reality.
Yeah.
Just so that we can kind of like move on to subject matter that's just sort of beyond the kind of like typical gay rights or human rights. Like we can sort of move beyond just sort of that a little bit.
What's that?
Yeah.
What's that? Becca, what is your idea of everyday absurdity and how do you make something like that funny?
Well, I guess like for me, everyday absurdities are just sort of it's the things that you see like in your job or your commute to work that are weird and like you tell your friend about or something like that. For instance, I'm trying to think of something I might have seen on my way here that was odd. I saw an entire construction crew get onto a subway car. And if you think about it, like, that's kind of a weird thing to see. And like you make on a regular day, you might not think much about it. It's like a construction crew's got to get where they're going to. But you can also think of it as like, oh, what's this entire construction crew, going on a subway car for? And you can sort of pick that apart in your brain and just turn it into something fun and over the top, which started as something you just happened to see earlier in the day.
Do you tend to see things through a funny lens for yourself?
Absolutely. Like even things that happened, like I used to do a lot of journaling and things like that. And I found that even when I was writing about like the most boring or like depressing things in my life, even just in my journal for myself, I was like writing them into bits. So it's very much just the way my brain clicks, I guess.
Anders. Surreal comedy. Mm-hmm. What's your idea of surreal comedy?
I just like to give audiences something that they are not expecting or that breaks the sort of conventions or reality of what they are used to. I've done shows where you'll get like 98% of the way through the show and then an entire additional cast will come on the stage that wasn't there until that point. And it's just so surprising and strange and doesn't seem like that's allowed to happen or supposed to happen. Not that I'm like breaking the rules or anything, but it's just breaking people's expectations of what kind of experience they're about to have. And hopefully in a good and joyful way. I don't want to make anybody break their experience in a way that terrifies them necessarily.
Do you tend to see things through a comedic lens for yourself?
I try to. I don't always. Sometimes I'm just walking around going through my day, just feeling like everything is terrible and the world is falling apart. And so I have to remind myself to try to look at things that way. Mm-hmm. But I, when I'm trying to build a show, especially when I'm working on sketch comedy, I'm trying to create just a unique and different experience for people that is not going to be comparable to anything else that they have done, so that even when it's not funny, it is still surprising and special and memorable.
Hmm. Brandon, do you see things through a comedic lens? Do you think that of yourself?
Like in my everyday life?
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, I mean, I don't really think so. I think there's a great deal of work that I have to do in order to kind of
to find the funny.
Yeah, and I think when I kind of look at the world, I mean, I think especially the way the world is right now, I feel a great sense of dread and despair.
Okay.
obviously there's a little bit of optimism there, but I do feel that things could be going better.
but you don't necessarily see things through a funny lens per se.
Not necessarily, not initially.
And AJ, how about yourself?
I don't think I do at all, really. Okay. Yeah, I feel lucky when I feel like jokes land on me and I'm just like, I just happen to be right in the right space and time for it to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think what happens to me is I'm just absorbing whatever wild experiences are around me. And then eventually I'll take some time to isolate, just let things digest over time. And then the pressure of having like the Sketchfest deadline is what gets it out of me.
Okay.
So I feel like a lot of people do actually see the world in a comedic lens. People who like are great at riffing and are just so naturally funny.
Right.
I think I'm naturally anxious and it seems to be a little bit of a vibe here, which it turns into comedy after like a long period of digestion in general for me.
Well said. Well said. All of you, well said. On those notes, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill. But without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. 4 PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Harder, porn star, burlesque performer, and the creator of Porn to Be a Star. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara at CIUT 89.5 FM.
Funny. What makes someone funny? Is it timing? Is it topic? Is it that je ne sais quoi that, you know, I have no idea. I don't know. AJ, and this is for everyone. What do you think makes someone funny?
It's a classic question that is incredibly hard to answer, and I'm not equipped to answer it. But I think what it is just context. Like, I think anyone can be funny if given the right context and if given the right dynamic. I think you just need someone to play off of or someone to set you up to show that parts of your personality that comedy comes from to be funny. Like, I think that there are plenty of things that in my head I think I wouldn't find enjoyable, find comedic, that just by watching good setup, good dynamics, and good support ends up being incredibly humorous to me. Like, I watched this movie called Tony Erdmann, which is like this wild, like, German movie about this, like, middle-aged businesswoman dealing with her weird prankster father. And it's very dry. It's like 3 hours long. And it was one of my favorite movies of that year. I found it very funny. And just describing it, the description I just gave could have been for any, like, NBC lawyer show, like a female businesswoman main character going about her life. That doesn't seem like naturally where my comedic sense would overlap, but just because of the dynamic, the writing was so good, the context was so good, it was funny. Mm. And I think that could apply to anyone in this world. Anyone could be made funny.
Brandon, what do you think makes someone funny?
So I think that answer changes generationally. And I think what it used to be, because that was sort of the most represented aspect of funny, was there was a lot of, like, straight white maleness, I think, which is why, you know, in the 90s and even now, you know, you get a lot of, like, in writers' rooms, you get a lot of, like, straight white men sort of dictating exactly what is sort of funny, whose perspective is the one that's sort of valued above most people. I think now we're kind of shifting into an environment or a world or culture where what is funny now is a strong point of view from a different perspective. And I think it's the ability to be gently insightful about an issue that you feel powerfully about. I think that would be my answer.
Anders, what do you think makes someone funny?
I think you can't really be funny if you aren't a really good observer. And both of the things that you are making jokes about, but also observing your audience. If you're not paying attention to what works for people or what just makes people feel uncomfortable instead of funny, then you're not going to be able to be funny. So if you can observe things, see what's strange about them, and reflect that back, then I think that that is what it takes in my head. But I don't know. I just try a lot of different things, and half the time it doesn't work. And then the other half it does. So,
and Becca, what do you think makes someone funny?
I mean, there's, like, as we've, you know, gone over, like, a million different things and factors, and one joke could, you know, kill in one room and absolutely bomb, you know, later that same night. So it's all, no one knows, and we're all guessing and hoping somebody likes it. But I've noticed, at least in a lot of the comedy that I've enjoyed, I like a lot when the personality of the performer comes through and, like, they're really honest to themselves, like, through the writing. And, like, while they might be doing a character or they might be doing this weird, insane sketch that's, you know, seems completely unreal and not based around anything, there's still that something that leaks through, and you know that's, like, oh, you know, that's where their viewpoint is and that's where they're coming from and that's their perspective. And especially if you can see that the performers are if it is, like, a sketch group with multiple people, if you can tell that the performers are having fun together, that always makes it a better experience as well.
So when I was in, I think, grade four, I was part of a children's theater, a children's choir in school, and we did a Christmas concert. And at the end, we got a standing ovation, I guess maybe because we were little kids and we were so cute and all that sort of stuff. But in that moment, that's when I knew, I like this. I like getting that response. I like people standing up for me. Hello. For me, that was the spark, the flashpoint that I knew that I wanted to get into performing, to be a performer, the performing arts. So then I went to a high school for the performing arts. I'm interested to know, for each of you, when did you know that you were funny and that you wanted to pursue funny? Becca, when did that happen for you?
I mean, I've wanted to either like do writing or performing, or I wanted to be a musician for a while, pretty much like as long as I could remember. I always wanted to do something in the arts with performing, and I was in a lot of, you know, plays in middle and high school and things like that. But I do very specifically remember when I decided that I wanted to do comedy. And I have no idea why this is what triggered it, but when I was 16, I watched the movie Groundhog Day for the first time. And for some reason, something in that movie, when it was over, I just thought to myself, and I was like, oh, I want to do comedy. And I haven't questioned it ever since. And that's just what I focused on ever since. So it's just this, something about that movie like flipped the switch in my head. And ever since then, I've only focused on comedy.
Anders?
I relate so much to your story. It feels
Really?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it feels great to have people give you all this lovely attention. And the thing about comedy is it's the most direct and satisfying form of that attention because you know right away if you did it well or not. There's, you know, for so many other types of performance, I've been through this experience of afterward, you know, your friends telling you, oh, yeah, you did great. And you know they're lying, but people can't lie about whether they're laughing or not. Either they are or they aren't, and you know if you've got them. And that is really satisfying. And it's fun. Like when I'm creating comedy with other people, I'm laughing throughout that process and I'm having a good time. And so there's a lot of joy for me in just sort of discovering things that I find funny and how can I share this with other people so that they find it funny too.
Brandon, when was that? Was there a moment, a flashpoint for yourself when you realized I wanted to pursue funny?
There may be like two moments that I kind of synthesize into whatever this career is that I do now. I know when I was in grade five, I was in an adapted production of Twelfth Night as Malvolio. And I put on the hammiest English accent. I was the only kid who did that. I just basically was a ham for the entire production, and I remember seeing my friend's mom in the front row, legs up, laughing so much at this boy who thought this weird, audacious boy. And that was, I think that was the first moment that I realized that I wanted to maybe, or that I could do that. And I also went to Performing Arts High School. And I actually went there or left there wanting to be like a writer. I want to be a playwright. But I started doing sketch comedy on campus just for fun. And I think I think probably doing that very first show, I realized this is special. And I think I want to continue to do this. So, yeah.
AJ?
I don't think there was ever one specific moment. It's a weird muddled history. I've always had like a connection to comedy. I was obsessed with Mad TV as a child, and I think I always tried to use comedy to connect to people. Like I remember once in like the fourth grade, these kids, I just watched a sketch the night before on Mad TV. It's the "Is It Because I'm Black" sketch on YouTube. Very funny. And this group of kids was playing soccer, and I walk up to this kid, I don't know, Adrian or something, and I was like, can I play soccer with you guys? He's like, no. And I'm like, is it because I'm black? And then he goes, no, it's just because we don't like you. Simon's playing and he's African. So I tried to connect with comedy there, and I failed. But over time, I found that those situations, whether they're successes, even if they're failures, they're still funny, and there's some sort of spark between people in those moments. And the fact that I can remember that moment even till now is, I think, maybe a testament to that. And then over time, I did improv and sketch in high school. I still kind of was not the performing type. I'm a bit of a nerd. I'm in university right now for digital cartography, so I didn't really follow through with a completely performing path of education, at least. But I feel like every week, every show that I do is that spark that reminds me of why I want to keep doing it. So it kind of happens every day in a small way.
So AJ, do you think you're funny?
I think I'm all right.
And are you a sketch performer? Are you a stand-up comedian? Are you just like a regular performer? How would you consider yourself?
I'd say right now I'm predominantly a sketch performer. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot with the Sketchersons, with a group I perform with every Sunday at Comedy Bar. But just by sheer mass of shows, I've done mostly improv. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of a stand-up. And I get laughs. So I guess I am allowed to say that I'm funny.
Yes. If you don't toot your horn, girl, nobody else will.
No one else is going to toot that. Okay.
Brandon, do you think you're funny?
He is. Yes. The answer is yes.
Thank you. Honestly... Yes. Yeah. Fine. I think I'm a little bit funny.
Do you consider yourself a stand-up comedian? Do you a sketch performer? Just a regular performer? How would you classify yourself?
I usually qualify myself as a comedy writer and performer. I try to sell the writing aspect of my abilities a bit more than my performance abilities, mm-hmm. even though they've always – usually outside of writing for shows and that sort of thing, they usually go hand in hand.
Anders, do you consider yourself funny?
Oh, I hope so, because I've been doing this for a long time, and if I'm not funny, then I am making a huge mistake.
And you consider yourself what? A stand-up comic, a sketch performer, an actor, a regular – just a performer overall?
I consider myself a person in need of constant validation.
So insecure.
Yes. Somebody who's desperate for attention at all times. I don't choose one of those generally. In some ways, I'm with AJ in terms of the sheer volume of shows that I've done. It's a lot of them are improv, but I think about my writing a lot, so I feel very connected to what Brandon was saying as well. That's a big part of what I do, but I also do a lot of work that isn't comedic at all. And so I don't know. Is it too much to call myself an artist?
No, that's great. I love it. Becca, mm-hmm. do you consider yourself funny?
I think so. I make people laugh, so I'm doing something okay. So I'll say yeah.
I'm laughing right now quietly inside.
There you go.
And do you consider yourself a sketch performer, a stand-up comedian, or no, just an overall performer?
I waffle around a lot on what I come up because I mostly do sketch comedy, but I also sometimes do stand-up, and I also produce quite a few shows. So I've got my toes in a lot of pies, if that's how the phrase goes, I guess. And so it really depends on what mood I'm in. Like today, I'd call myself a sketch comedian because I'm on this the podcast or radio show talking about Sketchfest. I'm also a full-time line cook. That's nobody really cares about that as much. It's more boring. But yeah, it really depends on what I feel that day.
Well said. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
there are two other shows I'd like to bring to your attention that are part of Toronto Sketchfest. Comedy duo Elena and Sydney bring their comedy show all the way from Alberta to Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival. Gender, I Hardly Know Them, a smorgasbord of political, surreal, raunchy comedy that will leave you breathless, whatever your pronouns. Plus, from New York City comes an all-people-of-color sketch comedy troupe making their Canadian debut. Gary from HR, showcasing viewpoints from people of color on topics like music, politics, social norms, and more. Both Gary from HR and Gender, I Hardly Know Them, are all part of the 15th Annual Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival, March 13th and 14th at the Theatre Centre. For more information, torontosketchfest.com.
Hi there, I'm Glenn Dixon, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So in the first segment, we talked about the elevator pitch. Now let's talk about what inspired your current show that's part of the festival. Brandon, what inspired your show?
Well, I guess I'd have to go to what inspired me to collaborate with Jonathan Langdon, which is that we were both in a sketch troupe together, the one that AJ currently is in, the Sketchersons, for 3 years. And he was easily one of the easiest people to work with and was very funny. And as an excellent actor and comedian, he sells every line so well. And because we're also both of West Indian descent, and the only two black members in the troupe at the time, we had already a kind of unspoken vocabulary or shared kind of connection that made collaboration quite easy. So leaving that troupe and going on to other projects and wanting to do independent sketch again, getting together with him it was a no-brainer. It was he's the easiest person to collaborate with, and I honestly just want someone to make my scripts sing when I don't have confidence in them. Mm.
Anders, what inspired your untitled show?
Well, this will resonate with the fact that it has no title, but one of the good things about sketch comedy for me is that you can present so many different ideas. And so I don't really have one point of inspiration for the whole show. I just wrote each time a new thing inspired me, I would write a new sketch about that. And then I've been going through a process of figuring out, okay, these are the ones that I like the best. Now let's see, sort of by retconning, how can I tie them together and make them all fit in one package? So they did not all come from the same place. They were just, each individual reactions to things that I observed in the world or was feeling myself. And so it came from a lot of places. I guess one of the clearest places, though, was that I sometimes write articles for the Beaverton on the website, and a lot of that work, sometimes when I do it, I feel like I am trying to convince somebody of my political beliefs through comedy and trying to disprove how stupid the right wing is being and show how cool things would be if we did things a different way. And for this show, I'm still very interested in politics, but I didn't feel like trying to convince anybody of anything. I just wanted to convince people to laugh. And so that, I guess, is the closest to one inspiration for it.
And Becca, what inspired your show?
I guess, like I said before, Noah, my comedy partner, and I, we do a lot of writing for each other and a lot of things that just we find funny or that if we're hanging out together, we're joking about and we'll take some kind of inside joke and turn it into like a full real sketch because we get like we've been friends like, since college. We're very close and we're very good friends. So we get to bounce ideas off each other. Really well. However, the kind of one of the weirder things is like we have a very different writing style. So a lot of times when we come together with our scripts, they're very, very different, but we're able to sort of like mesh them together into a narrative that works. And that just sort of gives us like our unique edge or whatever. So it's a lot of just taking our own ideas, you know, like the things we see every day and trying to make them funny for each other. And then if, you know, if I find his joke funny, if he finds my joke funny, well, then there's probably somebody in the audience that's going to find it funny.
AJ, what inspired thoughts and prayers?
Thoughts and prayers. Well, there one half of it is I just wanted to like reclaim and recontextualize the term thought, which means that hoe over there. I feel like the way
it's spelled T-H-O-T, right?
T-H-O-T.
I keep thinking to myself, is it tots?
Yeah, I had that moment, I guess, back in 2014, but it's all right. It's a new term, and it's kind of representative of like I'm a Gen Z. This is kind of our culture coming to the fore, and I wanted to show what our comedic sense is looking like. I wanted to have a show that's so explicitly written in our own terms. And that kind of plays into the theme of the show of us new gays measuring ourselves up to the tropes that lay before us that are set up by popular culture and the media, and trying to synthesize those two things and show that there's a whole spectrum we all fit in this community. But it's also a show that I wanted to be a bit looser, a little bit ignorant, a little bit transgressive, because I feel like in the comedy community, the general comedic language that we're speaking isn't the one that's of the moment right now, isn't what the young people are currently saying. Like the digital culture and memes, the things that everybody's loving right now, that's not what sketch comedy looks like. And I want to creep us closer to that modern sense because I feel like that's the shared language. That's the shared comedic culture that we have right now.
Becca?
I don't know. I was sort of like along with what AJ was saying with sort of Gen Z comedy because I'm also a part of Gen Z. And I've also noticed that, you know, a lot of – I mean, obviously there's still like a ton of – awesome sketch comedy in Toronto, but there isn't like there's not quite that new wave. It hasn't quite come up yet. It's still sort of like bubbling at the bottom. And but like just sort of the like you're like saying the new language and the new kind of style. And again with like writing into like the stereotypes of, you know, like I'm 22 and like you just sort of work like this full-time job while trying to perform comedy on top of that. And also the world's kind of crumbling and burning around us. So we're just going to make stupid jokes on stage, I guess. Like that sort of mentality has kind of been seeping into comedy, I've noticed. So I think that's sort of that Gen Z vibe that is coming into the scene.
So, Becca, how do you consider a Toronto audience? Are they funny, like do they get it? Are they hip? Are they more reserved?
My experience is kind of limited because I've really only done comedy in Toronto. One of the things that is nice about comedy in Toronto is there is so much of it. But that really means you get a lot of different kinds of audiences because, you know, we have a lot of great established venues and theaters and things like that. But we also have a lot of shows that, you know, are in apartments and bars and weird, interesting, different venues like that. And since there's just so many different kinds of shows, different kinds of venues, different kinds of audiences coming to those shows, it's impossible to really be like, oh, this is what a Toronto audience is, because, you know, you could do a Friday show at, you know, X Club, and it's a rowdy crowd that doesn't like you or your jokes, but then you can do the same club the next night, and it's a completely different audience, and you have the exact same set, and they love you, so it can't even be, like, venue to venue, like, this kind of audience. It's really just, like, up to that specific night in that specific room.
Brandon, you wanted to mention.
Yeah, I would say that's a very good point. I think what I think about comedy crowds in Toronto is or why Toronto can be advantageous for a more broad definition of comedy or broader styles of comedy is that you do have access to so many different types of audiences. So you can get sort of like younger people who are smarter or educated or have a bit more of a kind of a stranger sensibility. And sometimes you're exposed to audiences that are less, that have less of a range of reference or whatever. So it does absolutely vary everywhere. In one of my older comedy jobs, I mean, I had to tour out of town, and you really miss being in Toronto for a little bit when you're kind of out of town and doing a sketch about gay sex or something.
Does Toronto have a vibrant comedy scene?
I think we have a very vibrant comedy scene. It could always stand to be more vibrant. I think any scene can be way more inclusive, but in my experience, I think there's a lot of really cool comedy that's come up, even in the last 2 years. You know, like, I think there's a ton of really great stuff out there.
AJ?
I think Toronto's come a long way, and it's incredibly vibrant in comparison to a lot of the options that people have in just this province, even in Southern Ontario. But I do think that there are a bunch of gaps that need to be addressed in Toronto as well, because I feel like content geared towards not only just young people, but POCs in general, but queer people in general. Yeah, people of color. We are still lacking, and I kind of see that much too often. Like, just a couple weeks ago, I was doing a Skecherson's sketch where I kind of asked to see if there's a black person in the audience, and this is like an almost sold out show, and there was a complete silence in the room, which was kind of the point of the sketch, but it also just magnified how much of an issue getting diverse people in the seats and seeing content is.
Is there that outreach to, you know, the black community in regards to, you know, black urban comedians and comics? Is that happening in Toronto?
I think that happens in February. And we get a distinct
Black History Month. Okay.
Yeah, and then people forget that we exist the other 11 months of the year. Okay. But, you know, we still manage to work. But the fact is, we're essentially half of the black gay comedy community, Brandon and I here. Like, it's hard for us to be reached out to because we don't see ourselves on stage. We don't think these are spaces meant for us. So I think if we really wanted to make steps to having more inclusive shows and more inclusive audiences, we can't just have us as performers doing that work. We need, like, POC artistic directors, people making decisions to make accessibility and inclusivity core parts of these theaters.
Right. Yeah. Anders, you are not just a funny person, but you're also a very accomplished actor. What are some of the shows that you've been on?
Yeah, if we're talking about TV shows, I've been on Titans, which is on Netflix. It's a DC Comics Universe show. That was a highlight of my career, as brief as my part was, because I got to flirt with Robin of Batman and Robin. And what gay hasn't wanted that at some point? I've been in the Canadian classic Murdoch Mysteries. There's a show called Carter, and Condor and Taken, all these one-word TV shows. Yeah, I'm lucky enough to have done a wide range of stuff. I even got to be in the film Indian Horse, which was a really, really good experience.
Brandon, you wanted to mention?
No, I was just going to make a silly joke asking if you had also flirted with Murdoch.
Oh, I tried.
he was too into the mysteries.
It's true. Yeah, he just looked right past me. Mm-hmm.
CBC. So how can people find out about each of you, about your comedy troupes, all that sort of stuff? Becca, like, I'll let you go first.
Oh boy.
The pressure.
Yeah. I'm on Instagram. For my personal one, it would just be Danger Tape. The word danger, then the word tape. Pretty easy. My sketch, comedy troupe, Bad Tattoo. We're also on Instagram under Bad Tattoo Comedy. The two of us also host a monthly show at Comedy Bar the third Monday of every month at 10 o'clock. It's a weird, crazy, fun comedy variety show that we do that has stand-up and sketch and music, and everybody has a good, fun time. And you can find more information about that also on Instagram at Past Your Bedtime Show. And then our remaining Sketchfest show is March 12th at the Theater Center Incubator Space as part of the Alternative Route Showcase.
And Anders?
Yeah, my name, Anders Yates, AndersYates. That's my Instagram. That's my Twitter. The things I tweet are not that funny, but it will help you find out where to see me. And I'll be funny when you see me in person, I promise.
What's that? Brandon?
So generally, you can just find me on Twitter at Brandon Hackett. So just my name, much in the same fashion as Anders. If you care, I'm also on Instagram, Brandon R. Hackett. And that's it.
And AJ?
Well, you could find me on Instagram and Twitter at AJ with no filters. That whole little sentence there. My remaining Toronto Sketchfest show, Thoughts and Prayers, is going to be on March 13th in the Theatre Center Incubator Space at 9 o'clock, sharing that with the Tita Collective. So it's going to be a great show. They're all Filipina comedy, sketch comedy troupe, so it's going to be a fantastic show. If you'd like to come out to Comedy Bar, I do a new, brand new sketch show with the Sketchersons every Sunday at Sunday Night Live. That's 9:30 every single Sunday for the rest of eternity.
All of you, thank you. Well said. Thank you for being here in person. Love it. Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Conchita.
And I'm Barbecue.
And my name is Hardcora. And we are the Beat Girls.
You're listening to
Rainbow Country with Mark Tara
on CIUT 89.5 FM. Break free, break all the rules, just be girls.
Seventy shows, five stages, 12 hilarious days. The 15th annual Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival runs until March 15th. For more information, torontosketchfest.com. Don't forget to keep up to date with all things country, Rainbow Country. Make sure you follow me on socials at Mark Tara Music. Do you have a show suggestion? Maybe you have a guest idea and you want to send it to me? Send me an email, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And last week, we were number 4 on Podomatic's Gay and Lesbian chart. And by the way, if you head over to blog.podomatic.com, you'll find a feature on Rainbow Country, blog.podomatic.com. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.